A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. We're going to be sponsored by the Davis Cup by Rakuten between now and the Madrid finals in November. The finals take place from November the 18th to the 24th, feature 18 nations in the round-robin stages, and you can find out when or where your favourite team plays and buy tickets to see them in action by going to daviscupfinals.com. Now, here at the Tennis Podcast, we've got a special offer just for you. You can buy nationality packs to watch your country's two round-robin matches, and with the Tennis Podcast discount code, you can get 15% off all tickets. Just visit daviscupfinals.com, and when you go through the process, you'll be asked for a discount code before final payment, and you just have to quote TTP Davis Cup Finals. All one word, TTP Davis Cup Finals, and you get 15% off. Now, if that's not enough, the Davis Cup by Rakuten and the ITF have teamed up as well to offer our Tennis Podcast crowdfunding backers of last year, people who supported our Kickstarter, and subscribers to our Tennis Podcast newsletter, a chance to win an exclusive trip to the finals in November. This is unbelievable. The winner gets flights for two people to Madrid. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, you get flights to Madrid for two people to watch your preferred country in action in the round-robin stages. Hotel accommodation is also included. So, get on that newsletter subscription list. It's free to do so. Scroll down in your podcast show notes right now on your phone, whatever you're listening to. Click on our newsletter subscribe link and put your email address in there. Our newsletter will have all the details on how you can enter into our Davis Cup by Rakuten Finals competition. Get in there.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
Hi, this is Rod James from Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So thank you to Rod James for introducing this special edition of the Tennis Podcast, a listener questions special, and we have a guest editor for it. It is Victoria, whose wonderful dog, wonderful canine, Catherine's face is lighting up here in front of me at the mere mention of the fact that we're talking about a dog, is called Scousel Mousel. And Scousel Mousel is the title sponsor of our Tennis Podcast Predictions Competition for 2019, and he's done a wonderful job. And now Victoria and Scousel Mousel have chosen the very best of your listener questions to put to us as we sit here in our favourite New York eatery, which has seen a lot of our clientele over the last couple of weeks, including four beers one night, which I'm still recovering from. And we're going to answer your questions chosen by Victoria and Scousel Mousel. They've got a few of their own as well. Are you ready, Catherine?
Yeah, one of my mum's favourite ever dogs to paint, Scousel Mousel.
Yes, she did. She did the most wonderful portrait, and I concur. It was splendid. Mind you, I think all of your mum's paintings are amazing.
No, not until, I agree, but she enjoyed Scousel Mousel as much as any she's done, I think.
Any
good material to work with.
Any particular reason?
He's got a lot of character and a lot of different shades going on. He's a characterful dog.
Cool. I'm learning stuff. This is amazing.
I think she likes a challenge.
Okay, right. Well,
so do we, apparently.
Yes.
Here we are.
Yes, here we are. Let's get cracking. Tennis Podcast Listener Questions Special. First question from Victoria and Scouser Mousel is, behaviour on court. There seems to be a rise in abuse to umpires. Is this the case, or does it just get more coverage? If it is the case, what do you think is causing it? What could be done to stop it? Do you think it's possible to have a more spirited atmosphere without crossing a line?
Yeah, I do think it's possible to have a more spirited atmosphere without crossing a line. And yes, my impression also is that abuse of umpires is a little bit on the rise. What do you think?
Yeah, do you know one thing I think? I'm not convinced it is. And that the reason that that is, I think what's happening now is every court is streamable, virtually. And so it only takes a few seconds for somebody who's pretty techno-literate to be able to just stream a match, clip it, stick it out on social media, and everybody knows about it. So I think there's a bit of smoke and mirrors there in that regard.
But then also, if players are seeing more incidences of it, then it becomes more mainstream, becomes more acceptable, and then that in itself will lead to higher incidents, or could certainly lead to higher incidents. It's certainly the area of bad behaviour that makes me most uncomfortable. Generally,
yeah,
we love aggro, don't we?
I agree with this.
But I very rarely see aggro involving personal abuse of umpires that I'm okay with.
No, it's the one part that definitely, yeah, I walk away from. I walk away from a player. Actually, I mean, almost the contrary. I feel like standing up to the player, but it's what makes me want to turn my back on a player I might like if I were seeing personal abuse, and that's what rankled with me so much about Kyrgios with Fergus Murphy. I love so much of what he does, and I including some things that other people don't like, but I can't handle it. I can't handle seeing somebody just...
It's bullying, isn't it?
Abuse somebody to their face like that.
And obviously heat in the moment, etc. I wish more of them came off court afterwards and said, oh, I wish I hadn't done that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like with Serena last year, in last year's US Open final, I understand that they're under pressures that I've never experienced, and that can bring out bad things in people. I think if there were more fronting up about it, that could go a long way. It doesn't excuse it, but it certainly helps a lot. But there doesn't seem to be that much of that.
Mm. It's one of the reasons I always liked Andy Roddick, because... And as much as I like him as a person now, knowing him a little bit, I did see incidences that made me think, oh, that's awful, Andy, that's awful. And the good thing is he would come off and after a period of cooling down, he would also think, that's awful, Andy, and he would say so. And I used to appreciate that. It wouldn't actually stop him doing it again necessarily, because the red mist would still come down. And I think we've seen that with Medvedev. As much as, he sort of has done what he's done over the last couple of weeks, and then kind of given his... he's toned it down publicly and explained himself away. I still can see him losing it several times in the future, because he has a red mist in him, and it doesn't really matter, as we get delivered some baked clams for our lunch,
when in Rome.
Catherine, how lovely.
One last time.
And some quesadillas. Catherine's gone quesadillas.
Just two enormous piles of food. and David's got a salad.
And I've got a salad, because, you know, that's the way I roll. Although it's not the salad I ordered. I actually asked for a shrimp salad, I think. Yes. But anyway, that's all right.
That's okay. It looks very nice.
It does. Thank you very much. So, yeah, I mean, I don't personally think it is on the rise. And I still come back to... I was quite interested talking to the umpires about how they deal with this sort of stuff, and the way they talk about how they've got pretty thick skin. About it all.
Yeah, and I guess they'd have to. And look, there are there are issues with umpiring that are not specific to umpires. You know, the inconsistent application of certain rules. Look, somewhere in there, Nick Kyrgios has a point, doesn't he, about time between serves? But that just doesn't justify the behaviour.
No, that's right.
And harking on about that point, when it would have an awful lot more impact if he said, "Look, I shouldn't have dealt with it in the way I did. I shouldn't have taken it out on Fergus Murphy." But by the way, the point remains.
Yeah.
So I get that there are gripes with officiating and application of rules, but it's very rarely specific to the umpire, isn't it? It's very rarely personal.
It feels like it to me. There are some players who will say that they believe that there are, once in a while you'll get just a clash, and is there a way that it can't feed into how a match ends up being officiated? I don't know about the truth of that. But I agree with you. There are mistakes made, and I think it's fair enough for players to have their say. It's just, there's a way to do it. I mean, I remember Richard Evans, the long-time BBC broadcaster who knew John McEnroe very well back in the day, and he would say about McEnroe, he often had a good point. He would pretty much always have a good point, and his lawyer-like tendencies would come out on the court. His dad was a lawyer, and McEnroe would be arguing his case, and because the umpire wouldn't listen to him and wouldn't end up going with his perfectly reasoned point of view in his mind, he just couldn't handle it.
Which I can sympathise with.
You do surprise me.
It doesn't necessarily make it okay, does it? Yeah. I mean, it's a very lonely sport, isn't it? I can imagine how you can develop a persecution complex out there.
Yes. That's definitely what Kyrgios has got going on, isn't it? He thinks everybody's out to get him, specifically him.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, therapy is available.
So, we've just had a brief baked clams interlude. Catherine's leaving her quesadillas for us to get through the next question, which is
commitment.
Showing great willpower. We've also had Catherine humming along to Bittersweet Symphony, which we've currently got going on in the...
It's a very sort of emotional song for them to be playing the day after 2 weeks of Grand Slam, isn't it?
It is a bit.
It's sort of... I don't know.
They saw us coming. Okay, what else have we got from Victoria and Scouse or Mousel? On the men's game, the next gen. She says, there are a lot of listeners... questions around this topic, which I summarise as, what's wrong with them?
Go on, Victoria.
What's missing? Are they just wusses? Who, if any of them, do you have the most confidence will break through and deliver consistent results at slams which could challenge the incumbents? Very interesting, isn't it?
Ooh.
I mean, Daniil Medvedev's in the box seat right now, isn't he? Is he next gen at 23?
Well, the thing is, we have this problem with it. Well, I have a fundamental problem with the concept of the next gen, in that it's a rolling concept.
Yes.
So when was it devised? 2.5 years ago, something like that.
3 years ago, maybe.
And at the time, who was it? At the time, it was Zverev.
It was Kyrgios.
Medvedev probably would have been in there, but he wasn't one of the ones being.
No, Chorich.
Talked about much? Yeah, it was these lot.
Yeah.
And then they graduated and are now in their early 20s, but there's new constant influx.
Yeah, you've got your Ogier Aliassimes.
Yes, and I don't know, your Hubert Hurkacz's, and there's been so many over the years, and I think that's a flaw in the concept.
But what would you do differently? I mean,
I'd have had those bunch being the next generation and done what we did with those and sort of followed their progress as they try to make it in the game, rather than sort of you graduate, off you go out into the big wide world of failure, and we'll turn our attention to some others now. I don't know. I just
I mean, should they have started something else for the younger
ones? No, I think it was just a single-use concept there and then.
Yeah. I think one of the problems is because they haven't broken through and kicked the others out, we can't
it's
really...
It's like, okay, you guys haven't done it. Next.
Yeah. I should say that if I go back 20 years, which is quite a long time, and so that's 1999, I think in the year 2000 or year 2001, when I was in my last period of time at the ATP, the ATP ran a marketing campaign called New Balls Please, and that was basically the players looking down on the lens of the camera, looking mean and moody. And the players that were in that group were Marat Safin, Gustavo Kuerten, Leighton Hewitt, Nicholas Lapinti, basically anybody who wasn't Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi. Because they were absolutely petrified of what happens when Andre Agassi and Pete Sampras retire. Andy Roddick ended up joining this group, New Balls Please, when he broke through. And there was real fear.
How long did it exist for? Was it a rolling...
Because it just kept expanding. They had this group and then it expanded. And I always remember Roger Federer winning a title or getting a few decent results in about the year 2000, and everybody was talking about his talent. And I remember Marat Safin being asked about New Balls Please and how what he thinks of Roger Federer, and he goes, you know, Roger Federer shouldn't be included in this. And people said, why? He said, well, he hasn't done anything. He said, I've won the US Open. Gustavo Kuerten's won the French Open. Leighton Hewitt just won the US Open. This guy's won nothing. Yeah, he's talented, but what's he done? Why is he in the campaign? But I think the point I'm making more is that there's always this sort of cycle. If you go back, it's probably a 20-year generational thing, though, to some degree. We did have a couple of groups that probably really are quite unmemorable because they didn't win multiple major championships and they didn't really resonate on the wider scale. But if you think of it in 10 to 20-year bursts of Borg, McEnroe, Lendl, Connors, Edberg, Becker. Sampras, Agassi. And then there was quite a break for a while. Okay, there was some crossover when Federer got going because of his sheer longevity. But the period of, no disrespect to them, but Kafelnikov, Moya, players like that, were unable to carry tennis on their shoulders in quite that way, certainly in a marketing sense. And I think that when I was at the ATP at that time, there was concern whether Safin and Hewitt and Federer and Roddick were going to be able to break through. So they created this campaign. I have to say, I didn't really think the campaign was that successful. The reason is, you can have all the pretty pictures in the world, but if they don't back it up and actually do anything, it's what they do ultimately that makes the difference. Yes, you can capitalize on that. You need to be able to capitalize on it, but I think that's why Medvedev's fun, because he's now done something.
Yeah.
Let's get to know him.
But let's face it, the original next-gen poster boys were Kyrgios and Zverev.
Yeah.
And they've not done anything.
Zverev...
They've not done anything that can carry tennis in any meaningful way.
No. Well, they haven't done it at the Slams, is the bottom line. Neither one of them has been beyond a quarterfinal of the Grand Slam, which is a pretty rough result at this stage in their careers. So, are they wusses? I think I don't like to talk about people like that personally, but I think what Daniil Medvedev has done for us over the last 2 weeks, he's made us realise there's a difference between showing promise and skill and actually coming along and just saying, I'm here, deal with me. Tsitsipas has done it to a degree at the start of the year, and he beat Federer. And
he's ended up in sort of social media rehab.
I mean, he just needs a holiday, and he needs to go away onto a deserted island and leave himself alone and just enjoy his life for a bit. But he'll be back. He'll be back with a vengeance, I think, anyway. But a lot of them, I think, need to get out of the slipstream of these all-time greats and just front up. I actually think, as much as Boris Becker sounded a little bit soundbitey in what he said, that they need to show me something, I think he's absolutely right.
Sort of waiting for them to go away. That's what it's felt like to me. I do think the respect of those big three borders on reverence.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. Respect them all you like, but the reverence, I don't like seeing that from the young players. I don't like hearing them say, when they find out they're playing one of them in the next round, saying, oh, I dreamed of this my whole life. It's an honour.
It looks like they would happily have a selfie at the net before the match.
You know? Yeah. You see that. You see that on the practice courts. Some young players asking for selfies when they hit with Roger Federer.
What I love about Andreescu, how well she's got the balance of... She's perfectly respectful of Serena Williams, and Serena loves her.
Mm,
she loves the fact that Bianca Andreescu comes along and says, I've got masses of respect for you, and now I'm going to try and beat you. And I'm not going to apologise for it.
Yeah, she's the template as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. Medvedev on the men's side, but I think her even more so. What should be being replicated.
I think you see this across the field, because when we deal with big stars like McEnroe, and certainly my experiences of dealing with people like that, what they don't like is you kissing their backsides. They like it when you just talk to them like normal human beings and stand up to them if they need it. I think that they prefer that. And I think that does you better. And I think that's one of the reasons you do well in your job, is because you just give it to people straight. You don't sit there fangirling at these people. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of them not quite being good enough yet, not quite believing.
What's going on there?
Enough yet. And a sort of weird resignation about the big three.
Yeah. Should we have our main course and get back to the questions in a moment?
Sure.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Well, that was a very nice main course. I enjoyed that. Right, let's crack on, Catherine, shall we? So, Victoria wants to know, of the current big 3-4 in the men's game, after retirement, who would make the best coach or commentator and why?
Well, it depends if it's 3 or 4.
I think we've got to go... Should we go with the big three?
Okay, because if it's 4, then it's Andy Murray, clear cut.
In both?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know what Novak Djokovic would be like in Serbian commentary.
Yeah.
Not that there's any issue with his English at all. He speaks English as well as you and I do, but it would obviously be a different thing. Yeah, I think Andy Murray in both.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing with coaching is, And this is where I would question maybe someone like Federer, is just because you can do it incredibly well, I'm not convinced that means you can teach it.
I think quite possibly if it instinct players might well find it more difficult to coach, because I'd imagine them feeling sort of, oh, well, I just sort of do it. I can't explain how I do it. I just sort of
could you imagine
do it?
Could you imagine somebody hitting shots in a drill? And look, Roger Federer is a very decent, charming, and I think quite sensitive person. I don't think he'd ever try and put anybody off. Or, you know, obviously, he wants to help. But I could imagine him coming on, no, you need to do it like this. And the bloke going, yeah, but I can't.
Yeah, I think that would be annoying. I think Djokovic will have... I think he could do both, but I think he'll have other things going on.
Yeah.
I think he'll have business interests and potentially political interests. He's expressed interest in that back in Serbia. I think Nadal will have zero interest in either. Maybe a Davis Cup captain?
Yeah. I don't know about that, just because he's going to need something to be competitive at. I wonder whether, you know, and you're right about Davis Cup finals or et cetera, that might work as a, you know, he's down to play in the Davis Cup finals, isn't he?
He's absolutely not going to do broadcasting, Nadal.
No.
I
agree
with
you.
Pretty sure about that.
Yeah, I don't think that would float his boat at all. I think it might for Federer, but I don't know what could be big enough that he would bother with. I know that sounds...
No, I think Federer is going to be a businessman. You know, an ambassador for things, a co-tournament director of the Laver Cup.
Do you know what I think he might do in broadcasting? I think he might have the Roger Federer channel or something.
I don't know if you're joking. Are you joking?
No. I mean, you know, whether it's his
just
own...
Just with highlights reels of Roger Federer.
No, but... Like,
my brother would subscribe.
The world has changed, hasn't it? Whether it's his own podcast or his own YouTube channel, something like that. Just something that's... Because remember when he did his training session and he periscoped it, didn't he? And
Was that on Boxing Day or Christmas Day or something? I remember the whole Whittaker family were gathered around the screen.
Exactly. I'm not sure I could see him working for a single... rights.
No one's going to own Roger Federer, are they?
Imagine if Roger Federer had the rights to Wimbledon.
But I could see something like that. I could see, you know, his tentacles reaching, him having an enormous amount of power in the game and being on boards and, being ambassadors, being an ambassador for things.
I hope he stays around tennis and wants to make a difference to it, a positive difference to it. Beyond his playing career, I'm always slightly sad when a player just walks away from the sport. And whilst I completely understand why they do it, particularly for family reasons, and I mean, like I told Andy Roddick on our show a few months ago, come back to the sport. You know, he's got such a lot to offer to it, and I completely get why he doesn't do it. He's got young kids; he doesn't want to travel. And he's done all that, but he was leaving the door open. You know, he's quite clearly. I just hope these people who've got something to offer the sport come back to it.
Mm. Nadal, I found the most interesting one because he's a very simple guy, isn't he? He just likes to hit tennis balls and fish and live a simple life in Mallorca, but he also is a completely competitive beast. And take away the hitting tennis balls, and where else is he going to satisfy that side of himself?
I could see him doing a Carlos Moya and finding somebody prodigious from Spain that he really liked and wanted to help.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah.
That'd be great. What about Djokovic?
Djokovic, I would love to. I would personally like to listen to Djokovic if he was just blunt and didn't care who he upset with what he said, whether it be in a coaching capacity or whether it be on air. I'd like to.
But do you think he would want to do that? I agree.
Probably,
I'd be well up for that.
Probably,
but I'm not sure he will be interested in that.
No, I don't really think he would. I think he. I mean, look, he's obviously a very sharp, curious mind about a lot of things, and I think he will end up going into other fields, as you say. I think he will.
Tournament director.
Maybe, maybe something like that.
Tournament director. He briefly owned an event in Serbia, didn't he? A tour event in Serbia, or his dad did. Certainly he was involved
in
one.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's going to be fascinating. A couple more from Victoria. Women's tennis has seen much more success in the breakthrough of the next gen than the men's game, and we've witnessed some amazing matches this year. However, what hasn't emerged yet is a rivalry that fans can all get behind. Who of the next or just arrived generation could develop a rivalry as compelling as we've seen in the men's sport for so long? What are the most intriguing matchups in terms of psychology and style that could create a real buzz for women's tennis in the coming years? Great question.
Matchups make tennis.
I mean, I can think of loads. I mean, Andreescu against anybody.
Well, I agree. I mean, but I think, there are so many. But I think maybe Victoria's getting it, you know, one that you can hold up and put on posters, and even non-tennis fans will know about it, you know, like Federer Nadal, like Borg McEnroe, like Navratilova Evert.
The most obvious one to my mind would be Andreescu against Coco Gauff. I think that the issue is that we don't really know what we've got with Coco Gauff yet, do we?
I'm backing off from that sort of narrative with Coco Gauff a bit. I'd love to be talking about that sort of thing in 3 or 4 years' time.
I mean, I'm saying that
but
because
we're not there yet.
She resonates. She's already resonated across the boundaries of sport into more general mainstream society. And that is a good thing for the wider sphere of tennis. I'm concerned as to whether it's a good thing for her. If she did develop at the rate she's going, or even close to it, and Andreescu, I mean, the sort of ages they're at, would be fascinating. I think the thing is, I have my question marks about Osaka in terms of her ability to serial win, because I don't know whether that's going to be her, really. Andreescu, I'd be surprised if she didn't just have the appetite to want a serial win every year. I think she's a naturally competitive person. I think Osaka has competitiveness, but she's a different kind of character.
For sure. I'm trying to think of players among whom there's aggro. It's players among whom there could be a rival with a little bit of edge, you know, Medvedev Tsitsipas type vibe.
Yes, please.
Because there's loads of rivalries and great matchups tennis-wise.
Yeah, that's a good
point. There's just so many, but I'm just trying to think of one that you can put up in lights.
I still think that is possible with Andreescu and other, but more
yes,
with irritating other players.
Who specifically? Who would take an issue with Andreescu's check me out? That's what you need, isn't it? Someone that's like, stop checking yourself out.
I don't know. Maybe Sabalenka? I don't know.
She is going through some stuff.
Yeah. I'm backing off a bit from Sabalenka at the moment.
Yep, backing off a bit from reading anything into practice, that's for sure.
Yes.
Andreescu and... It's Andreescu, isn't it? I think. Just there's a vacancy.
The thing is, there are going to be other players, other young players coming along. There are a lot of young players with enormous potential. We just don't really know whether they're going to become what she's become. I mean, Anisimova, we've seen these great spells of talent and excitement, but you know, she hasn't won anything yet. I know she's incredibly young. I know that's a bit harsh, but we don't know whether she'll develop it from where she is now. At all. Some players, this is their best time.
She's got a bit of previous with Kerber.
Yeah. Well, Kerber's just a bit old now, though, isn't she, for a kind of compelling rivalry for a number of years. She's not going to be around that.
Tell that to Federer and Nadal.
That's a fair point. Yeah, okay then. Let's have lots of Kerber. I am looking forward to the next Kerber Andruski match. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
I'm looking forward to the next Andruski match. I think David's hit the nail on the head. It's Andruski, and somebody needs to emerge. There's a number of candidates, but somebody needs to emerge and fill that vacancy.
Indeed. Okay, a few listener questions here. I'm afraid I don't have names next to these, so you'll know your question if it's been asked, so you can just sort of punch the air and take all the credit, even if I can't read your name out. So if you could change the result of one Grand Slam match in history, what would it be? Oh, my goodness. That's a hard one, isn't it?
What a question.
Brilliant question.
There's a bit of me off the top of my head, it'd be 2009 Wimbledon. I'd give it to Andy Roddick.
Oh, well said. That's a great one. Yeah.
And what, how old would I have been there? 23-year-old Catherine stomping up the stairs. I might be a different person now.
Doesn't need it.
Doesn't need it, Math.
But I think I felt bad for Leighton Hewitt when he didn't win the Australian Open in 2005, but he kind of seems all right with it. He doesn't seem too bothered. I would say Tim Henman in 2001 Wimbledon.
He'd have lost to Pat Rafter in the final.
But, well, the bigger point is that would mean that Goran Ivanišević wouldn't have won, and I would have far more worried
about...
He'd
be in a ditch.
I would be worried about the health and well-being of Goran.
Tim's fine. Goran would be in a ditch.
That's a horrible thought.
He pretty much says that himself, though, doesn't he? He doesn't like to think where he'd be if that hadn't happened.
He goes, I would go to Alaska. That's what he said. Ivan Lendl, I wanted to win Wimbledon desperately back in the
day.
Said
no one ever, yeah.
I did.
You were a Lendl and a Sampras fan.
Yeah.
They did exist, folks.
Sampras had loads of fans. They were just not that vocal. Yeah.
Oh, what a song. What a great tune. I'm trying to think of a women's result that I would go back and change.
A couple of the matches I saw, we were talking about Jennifer Capriati last night, and she had an incredible match against Justine Henin at the US Open, got to the semis, and just an amazing match. And I remember really feeling for her at that time. But I don't know. Most results I'm all right with.
I would Daniela's 6-love, 2-love against Anna Ivanovic in the Australian Open semi-final. I'd go back and give that to her. Who did Anna Ivanovic play in that final? 2006, I think that was.
Did she beat Sharapova?
2008. No, well, Ivanovic lost in the final, didn't she? Because she only won the French.
Oh, yeah, she won the French. That's right. I think she lost to Sharapova.
Lost to Sharapova.
Yeah.
I think Daniela had a good record against Sharapova, so I'd go back and give that to her because I know that still keeps her up at night.
Yeah, well, understandable. I'll have a think about it as well, and we'll come back to it in another show.
I love that question.
It's a great question. There's some great ones here. If men played best of three at slams instead of best of five, would the big three be as dominant?
No. For sure, no.
If not, who would have broken through?
Well, a lot more of the next gen.
Yeah. No, I definitely think best of five for the men does help the established three, and they know how to pace themselves, gives them time. It's the time that, you know, when we were talking last night about the final of Medvedev against Nadal, and it was two sets to love, and it was all going to be over if it had been best of three. I know people say, well, yeah, it would just bring forward the urgency to do something about it. I take that point, but it's the time. I hate the idea of these big finals just being over before somebody's been able to get into them.
Yeah, and I hated that Andreescu Serena wasn't best of five sets. Could have been such a different match. And I think actually Serena's quest for 24 would be so different if she had that time.
Imagine how many she'd have won.
You can see the panic in her eyes.
How many would she have won if it was best of five in the from quarterfinals onwards? She'd gone about 40.
Look, we'll never know, will we? Because the whole complexion of the game at Grand Slams would be different. It would change everything, I believe, for the better, because I do believe in best of five. It's just that was actually one of my overriding thoughts watching the men's final between Nadal and Medvedev. I thought, how crap that Serena and Andreescu and the crowd the night before didn't get this.
Yeah, the extra time.
Didn't get what it could have been.
I agree. Final question. If the top three men were dogs, which breed would they be?
Who's this absolute hero?
As mascot of the Predictions League, Scousel Mousel has had a go at this one and thinks Federer would be a Saluki. I don't even know what that is.
Oh, wow.
Thinks that Djokovic would be a Border Collie and that Nadal would be a Patterdale Terrier.
I'm going to be thinking about this all week on holiday now, trying to get it right.
Catherine's going to get back to you, Victoria, I think.
I would go for some kind of whippet or greyhound for Djokovic.
Although,
that works in a sort of physique sense, but not so much. You know, whippets and greyhounds, they're not endurance dogs, they're sprinters.
Right. Well, he's both, isn't he?
He's both, but I'll try and think of an equivalent that has better endurance.
Okay.
Nadal. I think Nadal would be something just... something like a Labrador. Simple, good-natured, no side to them, just... give me a tennis ball to chase and I'm yours.
And I will not stop.
Yeah. They like the water, Labradors.
Okay.
Federer. Saluki is it's a big call.
I don't even know what one is.
A Saluki is like, imagine a greyhound. Imagine one with sort of even daintier features and sort of long silky hair. Delicate balletic dogs.
I think
they're Japanese.
I remembered what it is now.
I'm not sure I'd go Saluki, but I understand, Victoria and Scousel, what you've done there. I really want to get this right.
Okay, you can have some extra time, and we have other shows. We're not going to end the tennis podcast forever here.
Maybe a Border Collie. No, I take it back.
It's all right, Catherine. You don't have to decide on the spot. It's okay. We will allow you to come back to it. So, Victoria, Scousel Mousel, thank you for your guest editing. Thank you for your sponsorship.
This is not over, Victoria.
No. Thank you for sponsoring the predictions competition. We'll be running another one, although Matt's decided he wants to change the rules next year.
Juan Martín Del Potro would be a Newfoundland. That is a perfect incidence of dog owner getting... dog being reflection of owner.
Okay.
Caesar, RIP.
At Tennis Podcast, if you would like to tell us who your... dogs, players, never seen in the same room, should be. That's what we want to know. So at Tennis Podcast, let us know or email us. Go to the Tennis Podcast website and there's a contact form on there. You can send us your suggestions for dogs for players. We'll be back with more of these in association with the Telegraph, executive produced by TennisBalls.com, with our mascot, the lovely Rio with a Y. Catherine's still pondering.
Bianca Andreescu would be a Pomeranian because they're the most check me out dogs I can think of.
Which one would I be? Don't like the look in your eye. A great day. Right. So we'll be back with more shows.
This is a podcast in itself,
isn't it? We'll be back with more non-dog related podcasts.
Oh, don't Don't make promises you can't keep, David.
All right, well, we'll be back with another conversation between me and Catherine and probably Matt in the weeks to come after Catherine's had a holiday and I've had a bit of a lie down. Thanks ever so much for listening. We will be back again soon. Tell your mates about us and get them listening. Thanks for your questions.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.